Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all of the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredible, vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
I'm David Lee.
And I'm Mac Antigua. Another Tuesday, David.
We did it. We made it. We made it through the DNC.
Oh, gosh. I mean, the traffic was awful.
It was really, really bad.
You know, I was standing behind Elizabeth Warren at Bel Air Cantina, and you wouldn't have guessed that she would just eat steak tacos. I would have pegged her.
It's not good for climate chicken. Change.
No. Yeah, none of that happened, David. None of that happened.
That's the alternate universe. Imagine MKE podcast. That's like the
on Earth 2.
Yeah,
on Earth 2. That's what happens. Well, anyways, we made it through the DNC, and Milwaukee's hot girl summer continues, and I'm so glad that our city left such a strong impression on the nation during that Zoom infomercial for 4 days.
We did it! Yay!
Well, we're gonna keep carrying on, David, as we usually do, right? Because we, you know, one event doesn't make us, right?
That's right.
We're gonna continue pumping out the jams, which is abundant arts and culture on this podcast. Thank you for joining us. Another episode of Imagine This Podcast this week. You know, the topic is still around civic life, right? And policy. So stay tuned for that. David, that was the sound of multiple headphones clicking off. Sounds like I just said
people
that.
Love that. They just pretend they don't.
And usually before we do this, David, we usually do like story time, right? Where we share about ourselves to kind of tee up to the theme. Yep. It's a little clever conceit that we probably stole from your ex-fabula, you know, times, right? Of telling stories.
That's right.
But not this week, man. Nuh-uh.
It's not going to be our stories this week.
No, we are excited to do our first. Well, we've actually done an installment of this, but it was like we read the mail, like we read the viewer mail. But we're excited on this edition of Viewer Mail in Real Life, IRL. We've actually got one of our mailers on the call with us. Ladies and gentlemen, we're so happy to have with us Diane Choi, who's the Youth and Family Programs Coordinator at the Milwaukee Arts Museum, on the call. Diane, welcome to the pod.
Hi, I'm so glad I don't have to tamp down my laughter and smiling. I've been like holding my breath over here.
Awesome, love it.
Many of you listeners are like, David and Mac, you don't enjoy, you don't deserve joy. You don't deserve what she's giving you. I say nay. Now, Diane is not
you
on.
You might say nay, although I think Diane might say nay, right?
She might say nay. Well, I'm just saying Diane is not on here because she's a great audience member. She actually wrote this lovely email letting us know about what happened because she listened to one of our podcasts and thankfully has nothing to do with self-injury or contemplating a life change. It was actually about advancing her work.
Or RFID chips.
Yeah, it's not about RFID chips or something like that. So first of all, Diane, thanks so much for joining us real quick and telling us
your
story.
Thank you for having me.
What led you to listen to our pod? You could listen to thousands of others. In fact, there are 249 that are ranked ahead of us in arts podcasts in the United States. You could listen to those. What led you to listen to Imagine This Podcast?
I was actually trying to remember. So I'm a huge podcast fan. Like I listen to more podcasts than seems humanly possible. But so I moved here last year to Milwaukee from New York. And so of course I'm immediately like, okay, I need to learn about this city. So I was looking for podcasts and I of course subscribed to Lake Effect, the NPR show, a few others, Experience Milwaukee and This Bites, the food podcast. Of course, that's very important. And then, so I think either like iTunes suggested you guys to me when you started earlier this year, or it was either that or my friend Christine Fleming, who works at the Haggerty Museum at Marquette, who I know she's gotten shout outs from you guys. I know you know her well. Or she might have told me about, I couldn't quite remember it. I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact origin story.
Most good things flow through Christine Fleming.
Or
iTunes.
Yeah, I think for a few select Milwaukeeans, it's Christine Fleming. I think for the rest of the world, it's iTunes. That being said, thanks, Christine. Shout out to Christine at the Haggerty. Hope you're rocking it and continue to do well. Thanks for bringing us Diane. We're going to say you brought Diane to us. But Diane, tell us about what happened. You know, obviously you wrote, I would love for you to share. You made a connection. Now, this wasn't just stuff to listen as you folded your t-shirts and you know, all your great clothing, you actually made a connection because of listening to a pod. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So a few weeks back, you talked to Christina Gomez at the Milwaukee Public Library, which I was already all in. I love libraries. My mom was a librarian for many years. Oh. I love the library. First thing I did in Milwaukee actually was get my library card. Anyway, so I'm already super pumped. And then she was talking about all these cool programs that the library does, which I didn't even know about. I mean, I subscribe to their newsletter. I like them on Facebook. But she was talking about all this cool stuff. And I was like, I didn't even know about this. And then she mentioned the Book to Art Club. Right. And then my ears really perked up. And so it's a monthly book club where usually it's in person. Of course, it's different now, but everyone comes in, there's art materials. There's some kind of project that relates to the book that everyone read that night. Mm-hmm. So they start by, you know, making some kind of project. Usually they have an artist or someone coming in kind of leading them and making something. And then they work on it during the discussion at the end, they kind of share everything. So that's of course moved online. And I'm thinking, I'm like, making art, that's what I do at work. And, you know, I have access to all this great art. So I listened to I was like exploding with excitement listening to the podcast. And the moment it ended, she mentioned her email. So I sent her an email and I said, hey, wow. I just heard you. I don't know if this makes sense, but I'd love to support you somehow. I love this Book to Art Club idea. And she just lit up. And so we went back and forth. And yeah, so now I'm going to be helping out with this month's meeting, which will be tonight, Tuesday, August 25th. We all read The Revisioners. And I'm going to be leading a printmaking project.
Oh, wow.
Now, you know, if Christina really likes you, has she made you a mixtape yet? Because that's how you know you've made that next
No. Okay.
Maybe, okay. Well, I'm not saying she doesn't like you. I'm just saying she has a lot of knowledge about that.
To be fair, she also has not made us a mixtape yet.
Well, I never said that she liked this. I never reported
good point.
That she liked
good point.
But if I do well tonight, I'll get this mixtape.
Yeah, I'm not trying to raise expectations then. I think you guys had a great thing. Like, don't let mine be a deficit, but rather it's a possibility. That being said, that's so awesome to hear that you listening to the pod actually made connections in our own, you know, in this arts and culture world.
Yeah.
Fusion. That is so great. And I would say, like, we saw your email and I told David, like, this is why we exist. This is why we do what we do.
Yeah. Oh, yay.
So that's why we had to have you. And while we have you, you know, to wrap up our interview a little bit, you're new. You said you relocated from New York City.
Yes.
What's your impression of Milwaukee in this last year as someone who came from a pretty big place?
Yeah, I love it. First of all, coming here in the summer after being used to like stinky hot New York City summers, like that was amazing.
Yeah. That's a win. That's an immediate win right there. You're like, absolutely. It doesn't smell like feces, less rats. Like, I'm two for two. Like, this is a win. And I got a big old
exactly.
Lake. Yeah.
Absolutely. And yeah, this is how little I knew. Like, this is my coastal elitism coming to play, right? I've heard about these supposedly great lakes and I'm like, oh, my new place of work is on the lake. I'd never been here before I moved here for the job.
Wow.
And then I walked down and I was like, wait, this looks like a beach, like a real beach.
this isn't like your summer camp lake. This isn't like you could see across and see the rival camp that you're going to compete in color wars against. No, this is legit like body of water.
Because I'm used to either it's the Atlantic Ocean on one side or the Hudson River on the other. So I can either see New Jersey or, you know, it's just water everywhere. And I was like, oh, this is really big. This is nice.
I see why you're talking about it. I see why it's great. I see it.
You know what's so funny? Diane, I grew up in San Francisco and I went to school in New York and lived in New York City for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I visited Wisconsin with my wife, we were in Madison, so we were looking over Lake Monona, which is not a great lake, but it's a pretty big one. And that was my first response to. I was like, oh my God, this seems like an ocean. It was like, yeah, you know, there are a lot of like lakes. Lakes are humongous, David.
What is something you've discovered in the last year that you've just, what else? Besides our lake, which is massive. Have there been any sort of lovely discoveries that you've told your coastal snob friends about?
Yeah. So I'm Korean American. My mom's an amazing cook. She makes amazing Korean food. I'm very spoiled. Yes. And then of course, New York just has tons of like a big Asian population. I go to Chinatown all the time when I'm home, you know, all that. Yeah. So, and I knew Wisconsin a little different, but I've been so pleasantly surprised to find all the amazing Southeast Asian cuisine, which I didn't really know about. Like, there's a Laotian pop-up at the Crossroads Collective that's so good. Yes. I eat there like once a week.
Yes.
I think it's Thumb.
Is it Thumb?
The Vietnamese restaurants. I mean, so that was like such a pleasant surprise. Because I was really like, okay, I'm going to have to, like, whenever I'm home, just, like, eat all the Korean food my mom can make.
Send packages just, to you, right? Send boxes to you.
And then I'll just eat the, like, sausages and cheese curds and everything until I can get home again. But had a mixed diet, which I'm very pleased about.
Well, we are so pleased that you're one of our listeners among the hearty few. And we're so pleased that you're an active listener, making those connections with other listeners. And, and you wrote us to let us know, because we listen, we read all the mails that come through. And we're just so grateful that also that you've just had this great attitude about our city and that you also weave to. So how can our listeners connect with you? Let's keep the good vibes going. If they're like, hey, I'd love to learn more about your work and at Milwaukee Arts Museum, or like, hey, let's connect up. How can folks find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So unfortunately, we don't have our education programs running now, you know, for safety, of course. We are open, though, so you can visit the museum. So if you go to mam.org, M-A-M.org for Milwaukee Art Museum, you can make a reservation to visit the museum. We're open Thursday through Sunday, 9:30 to 5. And then me and my colleagues, we've been hard at work still doing all of our usual art making kind of projects that we usually do at the Kohl's Art Studio, which I don't know if you've been, but it's usually always open when the museum's open. We have a lot of fun projects. So we've shifted, of course, we've shifted online. We've figured out ways, like I've done with the Milwaukee Public Library, we figured out ways of doing really great artwork at home using just stuff around the house. So we've been like very creative. So if you go to our blog, you can find our studio at home posts. And then we're still doing a few times a year, we have a big Family Sunday event. Our biggest one of the year is coming up. We always do a Dia de los Muertos event in October. So we're lining up really fun performers and some bilingual story time event. And again, some more art making. So everything's on our website, mam.org. We're also on Facebook, Instagram. Follow us and make some art with your kids, or even if you're an adult. It's fun to look at art and get creative, get a little messy. Max making a face like
I'm listening. Diane, what's going on? Why are you throwing me under a bus on an audio podcast? I'm just saying, it's so great to have you here, and not just on our pod, but obviously you're doing this for our arts culture community in Milwaukee and beyond. Keep listening.
And also, by the way, growing our Asian American Arts Caucus. I think there's probably a small handful of us that we need to continue to grow our ranks.
Yes.
This small is an open but call. Strong.
This is an open call to our fellow Asian Americans out there. Let's get it. Well, we're going to light the signal and then we'll initiate the protocol. That's what we run it. Yes. That's what we'll do it. We'll do the thing. That being said, Dan, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Wow. That was so much fun. That little brief opening opportunity with Diane.
Listener mailbag turns into listener like guest time.
That's awesome. Listener guest story time.
Yeah.
We're so grateful for Diane who shared that, and also want to do a little follow-up coda, if you will, to Brian, who mailed us a couple of weeks ago, talking about the RSS feed. David, do you want to just clarify again what?
Yeah. So Brian, we had made a note about how like he expressed so much love for Black Imagination and Arts Forward MKE, and didn't note us, but in his
didn't note our podcast. Didn't note our.
Did say that he also loved us too, and loved and urged us to continue the advocacy for the small arts orgs, particularly orgs like Pink Umbrella Theater Company, which does incredible work. If those of you who haven't seen any of their productions, they do.
It's amazing.
Inclusive
content.
Theater for folks with who are differently abled.
Yeah. Amazing content, amazing audiences, amazing performers. So thank you for that. Thank you, Brian, for listening. And thank you for all the rest of you who listen. And again, hit us at pod@imaginemke and we'll continue the conversation. And if you do cool stuff in the network, we're going to celebrate and amplify it. We'll bring you on. However, you have to love us as much as Diane did, or else it's not going to be as cool, because Diane fulfilled things for me that I don't get in other places, is what I'm saying.
Well, our next guest also provides us something that we can't get anywhere else, namely nonpartisan research on the important policy issues facing our state. Can you tell us a little about who's coming up now?
What I believe is happening right now is that a new report was just out, which really examines the effect of the pandemic on arts and culture in the state of Wisconsin, which is released by the Wisconsin Policy Forum, I believe, last week. And so we're really excited to really dig in the remainder of our episode here to bring in Joe Pietrangelo, who is a senior researcher at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. You may have heard him if you listened to public radio, but we're excited.
This is like his movie tour time, right? He's out promoting the movie.
He's moving the movie.
Finally here to do our show.
I love it. I love it. There at the Policy Forum, he researches state and local policy issues, and they share their findings with elected officials, civic leaders, and Wisconsin residents through published reports, presentations, and social media. And after the music break, we'll have Joe Pietrangelo live to talk about their latest study, The Effect of the Pandemic on the Arts and Culture Sector in Wisconsin.
We are the proud, we are the true. We work together. We're heroes through and through.
Life, the foundation.
Awesome. Welcome, Joe, to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Joe, I recognize you are a veteran of live public radio. And so we appreciate you slumming it with us in podcasting.
Yes, this is my first time on a podcast, actually.
He barely had his contempt, which I really appreciate that he's so, that's how much.
Right. And after this, maybe his last, right?
It might be his last. He's like, no, I only do live. It needs to be measured with Nielsen ratings. Yeah, it's true to data. Like, I don't trust the analytics that podcasts use. That being said, Joe, we appreciate you coming on to talk about this amazing report, because I think it's really important to shine a light on information about the influence of the pandemic on arts and culture in our state. So very appreciative of you taking time.
Yeah.
You know, David and I have an agenda, Joe. Let's normalize it. You know, we want Milwaukee to be vibrant, inclusive, and driven by arts and culture. All right. We recognize you are neutral. Right. And we recognize you represent, and because of neutrality, that makes sure that the work that you do is even more respected, because it's nonpartisan, all this. Right. So if there's any point that you are in danger of risking that, we have a safe word, Palomino. Just say the word Palomino. We will walk it off. We'll be like, all right, okay, I guess we're dangerous. It's dangerous because we don't want to risk, you know, what you're at. Me and David were expendable. You know, they'll put in an algorithm after we're fired. Right. They'll place an algorithm to do it. But you, sir, we want to make sure you're preserved.
Although I do want to ask one really, really important question before we get started. Is mm-hmm. Rob Henkin the smartest person in Wisconsin?
Great question. He is as smart as anyone I've met. So,
man, that's a good answer, Joe. Man, you are good. I love it. That is a good diplomatic answer. Excellent.
That's awesome.
All right. So, let's get into it, Joe. With all the COVID-related research that the forum has done, how did this specific project emerge, focusing on arts and culture specifically?
Yeah, so we started looking at topics related to COVID pretty early on, and we've done a dozen different reports on various ways the pandemic is impacting jobs and local governments and state government and all kinds of different issues. And so the first piece I worked on was looking at the impact on jobs in Wisconsin. And we specifically looked at a handful of sectors that were among the hardest hit. The governor had basically put in place some restrictions on certain types of businesses early on, and then Safer at Home came in as well. And so there were a handful of sectors that we knew were among the hardest hit, with arts and culture being one of those. And so as time has gone on, we've seen, you know, especially performing arts have been so heavily impacted, continuing to remain closed in most cases. And so we thought, not only is this an important sector and a very hard hit sector, and important to the economy, but it has these other layers to it of, you know, the vibrancy of our communities, the educational kind of value that arts and culture organizations play in our communities. So we wanted to take a closer look, and that's why we looked at this research.
I mean, I remember the first one that crossed my desk was the effect on I think it was travel and tourism and I think hospitality and sort of and it looked at some of the effects across all of these sectors. And I think that's when Rob and Katie and I sort of began having these conversations about how we could be able to create sort of this arts and culture look. I think one of the things that we were sort of thinking through at that time, this was a couple weeks or months ago at this point, was how readily available data would be, right, to be able to be able to get a good look at the sector. How did you all go about that to actually be able to come up with the report?
That's a great question. And some data that we would like to see is not available. It's not put out in as fast enough as what we would like to be able to track what's going on in terms of jobs and business, business operations and whatnot, especially like unemployment numbers. We have to wait longer to look at specific sectors within the state. So, but we did pull data from a variety of sources for this. We got federal data, state data, and local data to kind of pull together different parts of what's going on and kind of see what the picture told us. On the federal side, we looked at just the size of this sector. And it was pretty striking to see how big of contributions arts and culture actually makes to the state's economy in terms of both the contributions to the GDP of the state, as well as employment. There are almost 100,000 people employed in arts and culture in Wisconsin, which was very striking. And in some cases, that's people who do work that they're not necessarily a performer or an artist themselves, but they do work that is driven by arts and cultural activities. So that was really striking. And to see that it was actually larger than a lot of other sectors that you might think were much bigger. So that was federal data. Then we also looked at state data on unemployment, and we could see, in terms of initial claims for unemployment, we could see that in Wisconsin, about a third of people in arts and culture have filed for unemployment since the pandemic started. So that was a really striking finding. It was one of the top, most hardest hit sectors in terms of unemployment. And then we looked at local data. We actually partnered with UPATH, United Performing Arts Fund in Milwaukee, to get more specific data on the organizations that they fund and all of the different types of impacts that they faced in terms of employment, having to lay people off or furlough people, cancel performances and educational programming, and then just the financial impact that they've had as well. So it was really a variety of different data sources that pulled together to really tell the story.
I think one of the more interesting things about the report, I mean, there's so much really great stuff in the report, but one of my sort of like takeaways, if I were just a random person reading the report, would be the amount of PPP dollars that some of the arts organizations and the UPATH cornerstone groups got. I think this goes against what we think of as an arts organization, right? That there's somehow like these small mom and pop shops that do, that sort of survive by the skin of their teeth, right? And these are actually multi-million dollar organizations. And despite the fact that they're nonprofit, right? Sort of being a nonprofit is a tax status, right? It's not a way of doing business. It's not a way their business model is just as vital and just as impactful as other businesses that have annual budgets of, $15, $20 million. And I think that's sort of a little bit of a mind shift change, right? For people who think that our arts groups are just kind of like, oh, they're just nice to have,
Yeah. I think that it's interesting that I think people look at it in two different ways. Some people only think about the more professional, larger organizations that, as the arts sector, and some of those get more support from private donors. Mm-hmm. And so, and some of those people, I think, forget about the smaller, scrappier organizations and the individual artists out there. But then, like you said, you do have some of these really large organizations that make a big impact. And for example, the Symphony, yeah, their PPP loan was over $2 million and the Reps was over $1 million. So yeah, there are some very, very large organizations that make big contributions.
So I'm a simple man, Joe. And so I love bullet points, love summaries. So it hit me with your best shot. Key top line takeaways.
Well, like I said, I mean, one takeaway was just the very large economic contributions of the sector, which I already kind of went into. I would say one of the biggest takeaways we had, and one that I haven't mentioned yet, was that we looked at the contributions that states make to arts and culture. Mm-hmm. So the amount of state funding Wisconsin puts, which gets directed to the arts board in Wisconsin and then distributed out from there to arts groups and artists. That amount is, we found, is actually the lowest per capita of any state in the country, which was very striking to us. We had no idea going into this. And so first we were looking at neighboring states and we're seeing Wisconsin was at the bottom and Minnesota was at the top. Mm-hmm. And then when we dug into that more, we saw, you know, Wisconsin actually ranks 50th in the nation in that per capita funding for the arts. And Minnesota is actually first in the nation. So that's kind of...
It's a tough neighbor to have, Joe. That's a tough neighbor across the river to have.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it was interesting to learn about the history of how they got that funding.
Yeah.
It took a long time and it was like a coalition of different interests that came together, conservation and the arts. And so it took a long time, but they brought a referendum to the voters of Minnesota who passed it in 2008. So it provides a dedicated sales tax that helps to support those things. So yeah, that's kind of a very unique case, and Wisconsin is on the other extreme. Most of the other states around us are kind of somewhere in the middle. And we also found that some states, you know, in addition to the PPP loans and, you know, other federal aid that has come in, some states like Illinois and Iowa have created special emergency funds for the arts because mm-hmm. of how hard hit they are with the pandemic. And so they've combined public and private dollars to help keep those organizations and individuals kind of afloat through the pandemic.
So, you know, go ahead, David.
No, go ahead, man.
No, I just wanted to make sure everyone at home listened. Joe, you were just telling a story. That wasn't a recommendation of how to make that happen. That was just a story right. that happened across
the state. That's factual information.
That's factual information that a coalition of several fields came together and put together a referendum in front of the people to say this matters to us. And so we're going to work together and put it in front. And it happened to be 2008, which was I lived in Minnesota at that time. Pretty good turnout that year. So just a story. Just want to be clear.
Yeah, and my understanding is that took 20 years
to get there
to create. So it wasn't like a quick thing that they put together, but definitely took a lot of work.
And I think what's also interesting too, right, is that it's a cross-sectoral coalition which brought together a whole bunch of different folks, including, to your point, conservation. Sort of in the context of cultural heritage, right? And I don't know if you saw any of the DNC this last week, the primetime stuff, but when I thought the roll call of states was really, really remarkable, where they had, you know, representatives from each state sort of talk about their area and talk about the future. And it was interesting to me that every state had some presentation of either a local piece of art, but public art, like in Georgia, they had the John Lewis, the giant John Lewis mural, or they were outside within their sort of cultural heritage, right? In Iowa, the Vilsacks were on the cornfield. In Rhode Island, they were showing off their calamari. And then, of course, it comes to Milwaukee. And, you know, God knows, we love the lieutenant governor. And he's trapped in the Wisconsin Center, right? And not, like, outside in the incredible sort of artistic bounty of our city, which sort of which is such a bummer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
he could have gone outside to the sculpture Milwaukee.
Dude, that's right outside, right? The Apollo Ward sculpture's right outside.
He could have. It's a could. Wasn't a recommendation. He could have. It was an option that wasn't taken. Yeah. So yeah, we're just gonna be clear. It was an option that could have been taken. And so the other thing that you mentioned also, just want to highlight, is that Wisconsin ranks 50th in the country per capita spending of the state, which actually is 13 cents if we actually look at the report. And not to be that guy, but let's do that comparison. Iowa's 39 cents per capita. Indiana's 59 cents per capita. Michigan's a buck 02. Illinois is a buck 04. So, yeah, I mean, like, it's not like they're killing us, but, you know, that is 10 times as much. Ohio's a buck 48. And then Minnesota, $7.37. Yeah. So yeah, that's like a wad of bills per person when you think about it. it's just one of those notions of, like, we are behind American Samoa. Joe, there's no question. I'm just railing. That's all. Because you just had facts. You just showed us the facts. I know for me and David, you know, we're always like, what's up with that, right? Like, it's like, what is up with that? That's not even couch change. There's more change in my couch that could go per capita than that. Go ahead.
I don't know what the explanation is for why Wisconsin is at the bottom or how it got this way. We did look back at the funding in Wisconsin over, you know, and 10 years ago, it was quite a bit higher. It was something like $2.5 million just in state funding, which is now it's like 770,000.
So that kind of closer to Indiana, right? Like that's kind of, that might get you like 50 cents per capita. Like it would be a little bit higher, right? At least.
Yeah, it would be higher. And so we've slid just in the last 10 years on that. And, I can't really explain why that is.
And it's something to note, right? We're talking about the whole state of Wisconsin. You know, me and David are Milwaukee biased because it's imagine MKE, right? In Milwaukee County, but we're not even talking about the rest of the state, right? And their access to that sort of funding, which I would assume be given our population density, you know, given sort of the amount of arts that happened, I'm sure the lion's share of those arts, state arts dollars would probably flow to Milwaukee, right? Just by the nature of that. So we're not even talking about other folks in the state, right?
That right. It is spread out across the whole state. It's, yeah. And to put that in perspective, I think UPath made a point that they are distributing about that much every month, almost that much every month. Oh, wow. Arts organizations. So it's
right.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there's like some really interesting stories to be sort of gleaned from this, right? On the one hand, like it's what a wonder it is that our city has such incredible arts vibrancy and arts, incredible arts institutions downtown, but also to your earlier point, Joe, of some of the scrappier, smaller arts organizations that are sort of articulating a different vision for what performing arts or local arts might be, that we have so much of it, and that it given the relative paucity of public funding, I mean, this is all funded by the generosity of our city's philanthropic community, our city's businesses, and the just like the sheer grit and will of our artists, which I think is incredible story. But I think also given that the great resource that the arts and culture sector is, that there ought to be there, and not putting this on you guys, right? But I'm just saying that we believe that there ought to be some public investment in this great public resource that is out there.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, one way to look at it is even if you don't think that there should be more public funding for the arts, it does put more pressure on private support from donors. And I think, you know, like UPath, for as an example, again, is trying to, you know, raise almost as much as what they usually do in this difficult time, and that's going to be a challenge,
right?
As it is, but I think it just puts more pressure on private funding to help keep some of these organizations going.
Yeah,
Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about UPath as part of this study, and because you were able to do a Milwaukee case study, right? You were able to sort of lock in and add some context, right? Those big top line numbers are pretty daunting, but you got to dig in and sort of see sort of like, well, what does it mean now for some of these organizations? And I think I would assume, and check my knowledge or check my assumption, you know, UPath has sort of like a group of folks they're already funding consistently, so you can grab that data or you can access them, right? You can sort of assemble them in a way to collect that with a lot more agility, perhaps, than trying to do a cattle call for other arts.
Yeah,
is that fair to say?
Exactly. That's why we worked with them. They had already been surveying their member organizations.
Yep.
And so we had just asked them if they could update, you know, send out the survey again and ask these questions and get at the impacts those organizations have already experienced in this the 2019-20 season, as well as the upcoming season, what they're kind of projecting based on how things are. And so, yeah, I think that provided a lot of kind of context for how this is really playing out. The impacts were pretty dramatic. I think over 500 people, artists and staff had been laid off or furloughed. There was a $2.5 million net loss on the season across those organizations. And you know, they track things too, like the educational impacts, the students who are not getting educational programming, which is in the tens of thousands, mm-hmm. Because of the pandemic. And as they're looking to the next season, they're projecting similar kind of impacts continuing into the next season. So it's pretty daunting.
Yeah, given that it doesn't look like in the near term our ability to congregate is going to change much, right?
Exactly.
Which affects a lot of their ability to convene audiences who in turn
exactly, and that's
or
why
even students coming together to
correct
learn, right? So
and that's why this sector, and specifically within it, the performing arts is you know, as much as anything, suffers because the whole operation is in-person gatherings inside, typically groups of people, and sometimes it's it's people's discretionary funding. There's a lot of different reasons why events can't take place, and even if they could, there would be somewhat of a loss just from people who are struggling economically now.
Well, these events, like theater, is not made for 25% capacity, right? Like these business models are not made for playing to handfuls of people. You know, like I used to run a tiny theater, a 45 seat theater company in Los Angeles, and it became really clear to us that like anytime we weren't selling a seat, we were losing money, right? Like every seat that wasn't filled was like us having to write a higher check amount from our own personal bank accounts to pay the rent.
Right. Yeah. And like, I mean, I don't know to what extent the virtual events can, right, you know, help the organizations to some extent. You know, you're not going to probably get nearly as much from those events, but maybe that's one small way to supplement and help kind of weather this. Mm-hmm. I know that the last we were going to go to the opera for the first time, Florentine opera, to see Carmen right before this all started, and then that became a virtual. You know, we got to watch it on video, which I don't think was the same experience, but it was still kind of cool to, you know, see an opera for the first time. So, yeah.
No, these events are meant to be live, right? Like Mac and I went to a concert a couple weeks ago. We stood in a parking lot to see like a live band play. And it was the first time that I was at a concert in who knows how long, right? Since earlier in the year. And it felt great, despite the fact that we were standing in a parking lot, you know,
with I think it felt great because it was the Yacht Rock tunes.
Well, that's true too.
Yacht Rock tunes. I think that's.
But still, I mean, it was also right. But it felt better than watching Yacht Rock videos on YouTube, though. Wouldn't you say?
Streamed Yacht Rock videos. Agreed.
And we have a narrow window where we can do those events comfortably. Right. So people should start doing more of those.
You got to pack it in, right? Got to pack it in now.
Yeah, pack it in.
So Joe, I'm getting a sense, right? You partnered with UPath. There's a sense of agility, right? There's a sense of like, you got it. Because again, you want to get this report together and you kind of and current just-in-time data. And so you're partnering and finding ways to get this information. And as much as I think that is a cross-section, right, of arts and culture, it's not all of it, right? And, you know, so some thoughts are, how do you get some of the smaller arts and culture orgs taking a look at, or even disaggregation by race, right? In terms of how do you know if folks that are Black, Indigenous, people of color-led arts and culture? Like, these are some of the wonderings, right, that I have, and just sort of wonder, what would it take to kind of adjust the lens and widen, if you will, to include those? What would it take to make that happen?
That's a really good question. And, you know, we've talked about doing a follow-up to this, where we would actually do some surveying of people who work in arts and culture or individual artists in Milwaukee. And I think that could, you know, help to get at some possibly, you know, if there are disparate impacts on people of color who work in arts and culture. So as far as, I don't think that there's like a good data source out there that lets you see what that is without mm-hmm. doing some sort of survey.
Yeah.
I think, you know, another option and something that someone suggested to us was looking at the distribution of funding through the Arts Board and, you know, to what extent that's going to organizations that are led by people of color, and that there's a possibility that could be included too.
And is that because that stuff's public record? Is that why you can access that? Or is it, because I'm wondering, like, could you go to, what about like the philanthropic organizations in town and sort of suss out where their grants been going? Now granted, maybe that's not the COVID related, but I mean, I think GMF is doing new sort of COVID response funding. It's a wondering, right? And that's actually been requested by some of our stakeholders to try to get a better sense of that. Cause I try to do the research and it's like a lot of Google searching and going through year-end reports, right? To try to piece it together. So I'm not telling you how to do your job, Joe. Just sort of wondering. That'd be cool. That'd be cool though. It'd be neat, man. It'd be neat. And the other thought I have, Joe, is that, you know, again, I don't want to overpromise anything, David, but like we funded 432 artists through our Artist Relief Fund. So like, these are folks we've built connections to. I guess I'm wondering is like, I would love to figure out how we can, you know, tap into our networks to get you those stories and get you that data. That's not my authorization. I'm just riffing. David's the only one who can sign off.
Yeah, I think if this project moves forward, we're going to be trying to get as big of a list as we can and get it out to as many people as we can. So
yeah,
we'll definitely be wanting to work with you.
I was just chuckling just now because I had this vision of Mac and Joe having created jobs and Mac being at the Wisconsin Policy Forum trying to like Google search to do research to put his.
Hey man, I have some memories of Stata. I think I know how to open it. I think I still remember how to open Doc. I took a graduate level course. All right.
Google is great for everyone.
Hello, Joe's demystifying everything. Like they got algorithms upon algorithms over there, man. They got high. It's like Minority Report. They're just moving stuff around like in the air, the numbers. So appreciative of you, Joe, for taking the time to like kind of break it down with us and sort of endure our questions / advocacy that is happening in real time. And you're doing a great job of keeping your neutrality and keeping your job. And as we sort of pivot, you it sounds like the opera is an interest. Would love to hear from you about you. Just sort of what sort of arts and culture inspires you or that maybe you're a secret kazoo player that we didn't know about. We want to amplify that on the pod today.
No, the opera thing was definitely new for me. I'm more of a frequenter of the Turner Hall, Pabst, and Riverside, kind of a lot of live music.
Yeah.
And theater, but mostly I would say music is my biggest passion. And so I grew up in Eau Claire, which
obviously
outstanding music education, and that has produced some successful artists.
I'm waiting for a cool story about like you played bass for Bon Iver and then you're like, nah, I want to do numbers. I want to do numbers, man. I want to leave this. I quit you, man. You're not going anywhere. Like, that's what I'm hoping to hear. A cool story that you were in.
I did grow up with Justin Vernon and a bunch of Eau Claire people who are making it as musicians, yeah, really, in the Twin, yeah, Cities primarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, like, the education in Eau Claire, like I said, was so good that everybody was forming bands. And so I kind of grew up in that, you know, mainly as a fan.
I was hoping you were in a band, Joe, because I wanted to hear about your band.
Man. I will tell you, I will say I played the trumpet, and
yeah,
I do actually.
Yeah,
awesome. I play in the University Community Orchestra at UWM.
Oh, wow. All right.
But, you know, primarily, like I said, as a fan in the music scene, and a lot of my friends were playing in music, and many of them still are. And so, yeah, that's been.
Have you had a band, Joe? Were you ever in, like, a band? Because you said Eau Claire had, everybody was in a band. Were you in a band yourself? Like a garage
I was
band?
In a band.
Yeah, tell us about it, Joe. Come on, tell us about it.
I don't really want to talk about it. But.
All right. Palomino. He's giving the safe word. He's like, no, I don't want to keep my job.
Not how we expected Palomino to come out.
I didn't expect the safe word to come out, but yeah, I guess it did.
So Joe, just so you know, we are going to start a rumor on this podcast that you were the one who built Bon Iver's log cabin in Eau Claire.
There you go.
So you heard it here first, guys.
I'm gonna say, Joe, that you didn't say this out loud, but I think your band, I'm gonna guess, it was like a ska band that only did like Staple Singers covers, but it was in ska. So that's my. I'm gonna put that out there, Joe.
The music scene in Eau Claire was very weird and eclectic, and we was mashing up, you know, ska, punk, jazz, metal, like everything together. So that's the kind of band I was in, and what a lot of the bands were like when I was there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's actually not too far.
I thought I was doing a bit, but he's like, no, that's actually how it works back. That's the scene.
You hit the parking lot of the stadium. That was pretty
good.
Oh my
gosh. Yeah, that's crazy. Well, you know, stop clocks right twice a day. So that's me. Joe, thanks again for, again, sharing your own arts and culture journey with us, at least parts
that was great.
Allowed you to keep your career, but also, also thanks again for your work. You're in your colleagues' work at the Forum, not just for our, you know, our issues, but obviously the issues that support our legislators and our leaders, grassroots to grass tops, to be able to make meaningful decisions driven by data. So thanks again for that work. This is the time we plug, Joe. Where can they find your work, or where can they find, how can they get in touch with the Forum?
Yeah, you can see this report and look at all of our research on COVID-related issues and all kinds of issues on our website. It's wispolicyforum.org, wispolicyforum.org.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Joe and no Twitter for your band?
Not for my band.
still trying to get after it.
Guys, we're asking all our imaginary friends, all of our listeners, go to YouTube, go find us that band. We want to go to find that band. So you didn't know that we have a very small army. It's akin to BTS. It's like BTS, but like 1 millionth smaller, but the passion is about the same as the BTS fandom. So they're all listening out there. We are the 250th podcast in America in arts. So they're all looking for your band, Joe. I look forward to, we'll play it next time. In all seriousness, thanks for being on the pod, Joe. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot. Yeah. Milwaukee strong like black coffee. Yeah. Milwaukee black and brown, so please change policy. Yeah. Milwaukee less work or ended poverty.
Milwaukee growing, let's make sure that we grow it properly. Yeah. Milwaukee, we almost got Joe to talk about his ska band.
Man. It, you know, so this is a long play of this podcast.
He doesn't want to lose his job. He doesn't want to lose his job.
Well, here we're revealing the long play of this podcast is to get Joe Pietrangelo to give us the dirt about his ska band and the fact that he built Justin Vernon's log cabin.
That's it.
That's why we're doing this podcast. That's right.
Yeah. This policy paper.
This was just the first volley in the war.
Are you imagining like a Rube Goldbergian machine, right? The water is now filling. And then like it depresses the lever and the lever cuts the thread. Yeah, exactly. It's a long play, everybody. Either way, all bits aside, it's really great to have him on to talk directly about how they do the work, as well as really lifting up and amplifying the fascinating disparity, if you will, between how much arts and culture is present in our economy and how much it builds our state's economy, yet is absent when it comes to how the state supports it. He didn't say that. That's my take on it. And their data, to me, highlights that.
Well, I think what he'd said about like how he'd grown. I mean, this was the portion of the interview when we were talking about his music and growing up in Eau Claire, right? He talked about how many folks came out of Eau Claire because of the music education that's happening there, and how many of those folks are working in Minneapolis.
Right. No, I thought about that. Like, why are they in Minneapolis? Right.
I get it's closer, right? I get there. It's what, like an hour away or whatever. Right. Yeah. But it seems like they should be here, right?
Why not here?
Or in Eau Claire, right?
Why not here?
Yeah.
Why not here?
That's right.
Why not here?
Maybe our prince is in Minneapolis, right? We'd had one of our episodes early on about why
you're
we can't have a prince.
Grew up in Milwaukee? Is that you're saying? Prince grew up in Milwaukee?
No, I'm just saying the talent.
Relocated. Yeah, they relocated. Right? They relocated. Right. I get it. That woman or man or whoever is now wearing a Minnesota Timberwolves, you know.
Well, they got the shirt. Number one pick, didn't they?
Yeah, they got the number
one pick. Well, you know, when you get the number one pick, that means you probably weren't doing so good this year.
No, it isn't. But we'll save that for another pod listener, our arts and sports pod. But in the meantime, we're so grateful for you for sticking with us for another week. We hope you come back for next week. Be sure to rate us 5 stars, share a positive review. Come on, retweet it, man. Also tell us what you like or what you wish at pod@imaginemke.org. And perhaps we'll feature you on Listener Storytime.
Get us up on Twitter and Instagram @imagine_MKE or Facebook @imaginemke. Mention the pod on social media. Email us, as Max said, and we will make you a #imaginaryfriend and actually a real friend on our show, as you've seen. Make sure you tune into Arts Forward MKE, hosted by Lindsay Sheridan, and Black Imagination with Kenita Hickman and Antoine Carter. You can find them on our website, Google, Stitcher, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the meantime, enjoy summer while we still got it. Talk to you next week. Bye.